This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And good morning. Thanks for joining us. It is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. So coming up this hour, we got some NFL news we want to get to. We'll also talk some college football. There's spring meetings going on. And another argument for nine games in the SEC keeps popping up. Why won't they do it? There's an interesting thought behind it. But we're also going to be trying to sell the NBA Finals. Do we have to sell the NBA Finals? No doubt about it that the finals that start on Thursday are featuring two teams that are not high in market value. Denver is 18th in market size. Miami, despite the fact that it looks pretty big, is actually 16th in market size. Now, I've said for many, many years that I think the average fan shouldn't care at all about anything like this whatsoever. It doesn't matter if you're watching a sporting event, whether 10 people watch it or 10 million people watch it. In the end, it's what you like, and if you watch it, you watch it. But in a world where leagues are trying to get as many dollars as they possibly can from the television entities that are bidding for their rights, the finals sometimes need a little bit of spark, a little bit of show, like so that the league can say, you know, when LeBron is playing, this is what we get. Or when Steph and Golden State are playing, this is what we get. But instead, we have the Denver Nuggets led by a two-time MVP that most people, most average sports fans would not recognize, and a Miami Heat team that barely got through the play-in tournament only to light up both Milwaukee and New York before finally beating Boston in seven games. And they're led by a guy in Jimmy Butler that is proving that sometimes just sheer will can win games for you when you've got a cast of characters that nobody remembers in the world of college basketball, or don't remember because they didn't get drafted on a June night at some point in the last couple of years. But in the end, this is going to be a very, very interesting series. This is a series about a team that in Denver that is saying all the things about being disrespected, how nobody believed in them, how nobody thought that they could be here in the first place. It's a tired, tired, tired old argument. Because my counter to all that would be, what do you want the attention for? In the end, what do you care? You constantly tell the media you don't care what they think. You constantly tell the media you don't care what they write. You constantly tell the media that you don't read them, you don't watch them, and you don't listen to them. And then as soon as they go radio silent or television silent or print silent, you scream to the high heavens that no one's doing anything about you and nobody is paying attention to you. It sounds like you're better off just going, write what you want, we do our job, and we'll show everybody when we win what we get out of it. Right? I mean, why would Mike Malone care about the Cleveland Plain Dealer writing an article about Nikola Jokic? He doesn't. What he's looking at, though, is an NBA world in which Denver isn't included in the conversation of teams and their viability to a championship. When we started this postseason, all eyes were on a couple of teams, but none of them really were on Denver, and let's all be honest. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that for the last two seasons, after a playoff run in the bubble where they went to the Western Conference Finals, the last two playoff appearances haven't been that great and have been relatively forgettable because the Nuggets had been injured. But when we started this playoff journey, there was a buzz about Phoenix and Kevin Durant. There was a buzz about Golden State flipping a switch. We didn't know how good Memphis could be. We saw them a year before give Golden State a run in the playoffs. Could they produce that again? And oh, by the way, what about LeBron and the Lakers, who were healthy and playing really good basketball at the time? So I get the chip on the shoulder thing, but I also don't get the constant whining of we don't get enough attention. Attention for what? What do you want? Would it make you happy if the media that you scorn on a daily basis finally does write about you, finally does care about you? Nikola Jokic seems like a player that doesn't want to be part of any interviews whatsoever. He rarely sits down for one-on-ones. In fact, he really just does the minimum mandatory that is projected by the league. So what else do you want? Now, some players are great at playing the media game. They know the larger picture for their brand. Some players don't care about the brand because the brand takes care for itself if you start winning basketball games. So how do we sell this series? How do we say, you know what? Maybe it isn't LeBron and the Lakers and Boston. Maybe it isn't Golden State taking on the Milwaukee Bucks and Giannis. Maybe it isn't a series of the top teams in the NBA this season. Maybe it isn't that at all. But the Denver Nuggets won the West, and it was a quiet winning of the West, because what they did was they said, hey, you know what? We have Nikola Jokic, and we're going to put players around Nikola Jokic that will enhance Jokic and the team. They didn't go crazy at the trade deadline. They didn't package for a big move. They're not a three-tiered superstar team. They're just a team that found something that was working and realized, wait, despite some troubles, we're sticking with this formula. Remember, they drafted Michael Porter Jr. out of Missouri, who had a back injury at Missouri. And they still found that they were willing to be patient because they saw a skill in this kid that many people had projected when he was going into college. But again, the back injuries derailed him. But we all know back injuries, man. You never know when you're coming out of those. And the Miami Heat are as close to a Cinderella story in the NBA in terms of the relationship between that sport and the NCAA tournament as you're going to get. And as I was saying yesterday, they're not true Cinderellas in that they're an NBA team of professional players. But, I mean, when you really break down and peel away the onion of this team, you've got one of the most brilliant basketball coaches in the history of the game, a guy in Jimmy Butler who just plays in this postseason in you better beat me because I'll beat you mentality, and a whole bunch of players that weren't drafted. How in the world did they cobble together a team that is now the Eastern Conference champions for what, the second time in four playoffs? That's really remarkable. It's really remarkable. So it doesn't have the razzmatazz of a LeBron James and the Lakers against Jason Tatum and the Celtics. It doesn't have the pop of Giannis going up against Steph Curry and Golden State. But it does have basketball. If you love basketball, you're going to love this series. It's going to be a strategist's dream. How are they going to slow down Jokic? How do you contain some of the Miami Heat players? Is Tyler Hero coming back? There's going to be so many different angles. How does Denver work against that zone, that magical zone of Eric Spoelstra? There's going to be a lot of basketball here. There may not be a lot of larger megastar, sell me my Subway sandwich and my latest wireless plan. There may not be a lot of that, but there is going to be some good basketball here. Two things are going to happen at the end of these finals. Two things. The Denver Nuggets are going to win their first NBA championship, or the Miami Heat are going to put together an incredible championship run that is not going to be duplicated or exceeded. Find me another team that will be able to win a title going through a play-in tournament where they lost their play-in opener and had to hold court in the 8-9 game. You're not going to find teams that are going to do that. It's going to be one of the most historical playoff runs of any team in any sport. Those are the two things that are going to happen. Now, the first one is interesting because Denver winning their first NBA championship. Okay. Maybe that doesn't appeal to Main Street USA. Maybe it doesn't appeal to people in Atlanta. Maybe it doesn't appeal to people in Dallas. Maybe it doesn't appeal to people in Boston or anything like that. But as far as sports stories go, it's a rather unique story. It's a city that has loved its Denver Broncos, watched them lose four Super Bowls before they won two with John Elway and another one with Peyton Manning, also losing a Super Bowl with Peyton Manning. And meanwhile, the Nuggets had been in town for a long time and not doing anything. And the Avalanche came in and won a Stanley Cup right away, so much so the people of Denver thought you should do that every year. Why not? How hard is this? Because they never experienced the pain of, let's say, a Rangers fan who had to post signs like, now I can die in peace, when they finally won the Stanley Cup again in 1994. And the Rockies were an expansion baseball team in the 90s. And they went to a World Series in 2007. And they're pretty much been a bottom team in Major League Baseball in any other year. But the Nuggets have been around since the ABA days. Always teasing, but never really competing. So the Miami Heat would be the bigger story. Eric Spoelstra and his legend would continue to grow. Denver, it would just be more of a local thing. So I can't sell you really Denver winning a title, yay. But I can sell you the series. This series should be great. It should be fun from a basketball standpoint. But here's the thing. I got no idea if this thing's going 4, 5, 6, or 7. I have no idea. Like, I want to believe that this series could go 7. That the Miami Heat have done this to everybody else. Why can't they do it to Denver? But every time I remember Denver playing against the Lakers, and it feels like a million years ago since the last time they played, I just remember a team where I saw the Lakers play the very, very, very best that they could, and they just couldn't win. They did not play terrible, did not come away going, we didn't do enough, just playing, you know what, we gave them every shot we could, and it wasn't close. And I think there was some level of feeling in the Phoenix series for the Nuggets that, you know what, maybe if Chris Paul was healthy in that series, maybe the dynamic of that series would change. Remember, Phoenix was leading game two when Paul left. But what I saw in the Lakers series makes me realize that you can give Denver every ounce of effort you can, and it still just might not be good enough. So buckle in on Thursday night for game one. We'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, on Twitter at Tony D Radio at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Glad you could be with us this morning as we roll along on a Wednesday. Oh my God, it's June 1st, starting Thursday night. That's when the NBA Finals start.
Tomorrow.
We're already hitting June. This is the last day of May.
It's crazy.
No, it's flying through. And then we get bogged down in summer a bit, and then fall just kicks in.
Yep.
Now, but, oh, goodness, it's already June.
And then immediately we'll start complaining again about, hey, it's just a few months. We're going to be saying, man, that NFL season went by fast.
I know. You know what? They're having spring meetings for the SEC. And I'm like, yeah, and there'll be media days in like a blink of an eye.
Yep.
They'll be roaring to go. June is an interesting month because, we are now at a point where the sports calendar sort of gets, it's trickling in with just a few major events. The NHL play Stanley Cup Finals and the NBA Finals kind of dominate the month, but the month also has the U.S. Open, which is, big. And then July comes, and there's the British Open. But July, I think, is like the waiting room for the NFL and football season. Like, it's like right. A month of chill out, because when we get to August, there's going to be a lot of stuff for you to digest as a fan, not only just us in the business, but as a fan, because training camps will start, college football practices will start, you'll start feeling the urgency of the season coming up. College football starts usually early in like week zero is like August 25th or something like that, and the first couple of games are right before Labor Day. And so July is more like, chill. Everybody slow down, relax, do your thing. Enjoy a hot dog eating contest at Coney Island. How about that? You enjoy that? Maybe a summer league event in Las Vegas for the NBA. But June is, hey, this is when we got the final. We got two championship runs for two of the sports in America. We've got a U.S. Open. We got an NBA draft. There's some things in June that we like. But when we get to July, go on vacation. Chill out. Because at the end of the month, things are really going to start to heat up. But man, I'm really looking forward to these finals. I really am. I think they're great storylines. Yeah. I mean, I agree with people who are looking at this saying, man, I wish it was LeBron and the Celtics against the Celtics. I get it. Yeah. I get it. I totally get that, because LeBron in the Lakers against the Celtics, adding to that legacy, like to that rivalry, that Celtics Lakers rivalry, where there's another chapter, right? Kobe had his run against the Celtics. You could have LeBron in his run against the Celtics. But it, it I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't know if that's ever going to happen. It might, it could happen next year. Who knows? There's all this conversation about the Celtics. What do? They fire their coach? Do they sign Jaylen Brown? Do they keep those two together, him and Jason Tatum? But I'm really happy for the Nuggets in a way of they did something that normally you don't see, which is for whatever, whoever told them, think about this for a second. Mike Malone gets the head coaching job. And he gets fired in Sacramento, and he gets a head coaching job in Denver. And as Scott Hastings pointed out, they're starting to come together as a team. They're not very good. They're starting to come together as a team. They draft Nikola Jokic in the second round. He's starting to emerge as a pretty good player. They get to a last game of the season. So this was a couple – this was like just before the bubble. And so they got to go to Minnesota, and they got to beat the Timberwolves in the final game of the regular season in order to make the playoffs. They don't make the playoffs. They lose. But their organization goes, you know what? We like what we're doing. We like what we're doing. We're going to stick with this. We're going to put in. We're going to bring in role players, but we think Jokic is turning into a really good player, and we're going to stick with just the draft. No big free agent splashes. We're going to just build it. This core, we're going to build it and make it better. Now think about how incredibly confident you have to be in the NBA to do that. Because the NBA, things can change overnight. You can be a good basketball team that got better because at the trade deadline you picked up Kevin Durant. You could be a good basketball team that got worse because at the trade deadline you picked up Kyrie Irving. Even though it's not really Kyrie Irving's fault, but nevertheless, they lost defensive players because of it. You can sign a free agent in the offseason. There's so many different ways a team can go from zero to playoffs to not only zero to playoffs, but zero to contending for a championship really quickly. Like keeping a formula of the same kind of guys and just adding and, not going crazy and not overspending. That's almost a recipe of like, you better be right. Because if you're not right, the teams you think you're better than today will be better than you tomorrow. That's how fast things can change in the NBA. And they were confident enough that Jokic was going to be the centerpiece. Now, this is before he won two MVPs, right? I mean, this was before the Disney World. We came back from 2-3-1 deficits to win series to get to the Western Conference Finals. This was all before that. And they felt like this is the way we're going to do it. This is how we're going to do it. And it's a long process, but it paid off. It paid off. And we know how tough the Western Conference is going to be, right? I mean, teams go up and down, and we know that who knows how long. Maybe Victor Wembanyama becomes a megastar that people say, and San Antonio in 2 or 3 years will be a force in the West. Maybe that's the case. Maybe it won't. I don't know. But we know how things can change. We anticipate that Phoenix will be very good once they – now Kevin Durant will have a full season of coming together and playing. There's going to be some teams in the West that are going to be getting themselves straight or getting themselves better. So I don't know if this is a long play for Denver or could lead to a couple of championships. Are they the new Golden State? I don't know. But I do know this. I give them credit for putting together what they've been putting together. That takes a lot of moxie in a league where everybody wants the big splash. Everybody wants the big signing. Everybody wants to know what you're going to be doing when the trade deadline comes. Right, there's already a buzz about where Damian Lillard is going to go. He's not going to want to hang out in Portland. Portland is the number 3 pick. He doesn't want to hang out on a team that's building players 2-3 years down the road. So who's going to make a run for Damian Lillard if that story comes to fruition? This league is crazy nuts like that. We saw what LeBron and Chris Bosh did 13 years ago. And that when they went down to Miami. Right, yeah, that was the beginning. And we saw what Kevin Durant did in the summer of 2016, where he just went, yeah, I'm going to join them.
Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
And then forced his way into creating another big three that didn't happen.
Right, exactly. And then everybody was buzzing about what he was going to do in Brooklyn, and that didn't work out. But nevertheless, it still was like, whoa.
I am fearful, though, because if all the rumors are true, about Kyrie Irving going to the Lakers, I'm not a big fan.
Yeah, there's something about that's not making me go, whoa!
And I'm sure Dallas is sitting there going, yeah, we're not really going to fight for him.
Yeah, well, it's too bad, too, because they gave up a lot for him for a run that didn't go anywhere.
Oh, they certainly gave the farm up.
That's a 30 for 30 in a couple of years. It's like a mini 30 for 30, one of those half-hour documentaries where Mark Cuban is just on TV just going, and I just heard it. They just called me and told me that they were going to do this. I said, sure. And then the losses came pouring in. God. But, man, and then on the flip side, as I was saying about the Nuggets, on the flip side, I just think the story of the Miami Heat has been unbelievable. It's just been unbelievable.
It really
They've been discounted every step of the way.
It's I mean, it's amazing. I mean, I don't know how many eight seeds have made it, especially in the way this new playoff structure. I know in this new playoff structure, I don't think any have because, I mean, they certainly played more rounds.
They were
the play-in game.
So they were the eight seed going into the playoffs, and then they lost to Atlanta.
Yep.
So Atlanta became the seven seed. So then they had to go home and wait for the 9-10 game, which was Toronto, I think, or Chicago. I think it was Chicago. They played Chicago and beat them, and then they got Milwaukee. You know, remember that story I told you about Jim Boeheim all those years ago when he said, listen, if they can beat Duke, they can beat us.
Yeah.
When he was asked, like, is it easier that Duke is out of the bracket? And he's like, why? If they can beat Duke, they can beat us. That thought is very prevalent here. Like, every single opponent thought they were getting a really true eight seed. A team is not quite good, barely got in, very, very flawed, but we need eight, so you might as well join the party. And every single fan base thought, oh, this would be good. We'll take on the and they didn't understand that if you could beat Milwaukee, they could beat the Knicks. If they beat the Knicks, they could beat Boston. There was this level of same thing in Denver. It's like if they can beat all these teams, they can beat the Nuggets. I don't know if they will, but they can beat the Nuggets. I mean, this idea that this will be a short series, I'm leaning against that. I'm leaning against that. I don't think it's going to go seven, but I don't think Miami is going to get – there's no way Spoelstra and Jimmy Butler are going to get swept in a series. He's too smart and he's too determined, right?
I mean, that's why we were saying – I mean, it could be a five-game win by the Nuggets, six-game win by the Nuggets. I still think the Nuggets win.
I do too.
It's not going to be a sweep.
No. No. This is a – I mean, especially when you go to Boston and win game seven, you're like, all right, we're whatever it takes. We're ready. Let's go. Let's get to Denver. Let's go. Let's go play. We'll see. All right. Coming up, that spring meeting in the SEC raising yet another argument for nine games. Why that's important coming up next.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsNap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. We continue. It's Wake Up Call. Hit us up on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. All right, so before I get to one other college football note, Eli Drinkwitz is the head coach at Missouri. And I really don't like this story because this story is going to show, it goes back to something. Listen, I don't get political here, but I do sometimes state what's going on. And I feel like over the last couple of years, we've gotten more and more people that have to feel like they have to be very careful of how they say things, because boy, that Twitter mob will come for you and your family and anybody that you've ever met and known in your life. And that's what happened to Eli Drinkwitz, who was talking about NIL. And again, this is Tuesday was the first day of SEC spring meetings down in Destin, Florida. And Drinkwitz, again, the head coach at Missouri, was saying that players were, said, quote, people are making more money in NIL than my brother-in-law, who's a pediatrician, who saves lives. And it was presented to people as he doesn't care about NIL. Like, he thinks NIL is ridiculous, or he thinks the concept of NIL is dumb, or whatever it may be, or he doesn't support the players making money. And boy, oh boy, they came after him, and they came after him hard. And so this is what he had to respond to. He said, y'all real trying to get me in trouble here. Deion Sanders had a really good quote the other day about talking about young men are joining a business, but we want to treat them like kids. We're giving guys, 18, 19, 22-year-olds, life-changing money. People are making more money in NIL than my brother-in-law, who's a pediatrician who saves lives, and we kind of do it cavalier, and we think there are not going to be any side effects. There's not going to be any issues. There's information out there. There are bad actors always trying to make a dollar. I think it's going to become one of those key issues that we face in our locker room. I don't think that quote deserved the kind of scrutiny that people gave him. Look, I am for NIL. I am for player empowerment. I think that the system of college athletics has exploited that for years and years and years and years and years, decades. And I think it is time that players are treated like an entity that allows them to make money, especially in a new world. Look, if you go back to Marcus Allen running the football at USC, he didn't have TikTok to make money off of. He didn't have YouTube videos to make money off of. But I guarantee you that there were a lot of companies that would have liked to put him in a commercial, would have liked to put him in an ad for their product. Same with a whole bunch of athletes over the decades in every single year in college sports, right? But they couldn't, and now they can. And so, and I've said many times, I think that you need, and whether it's the college or somebody, to come in and say, hey, student athlete, let me talk to you for a second. This is great that you were able to make $2.5 million in your career. What did you do with it? What are you going to do with it? How are you putting it away? How are you investing it? How are you making sure that that money isn't blasted through? Because remember, when guys become professional athletes, and it doesn't matter what sport, they all have these seminars. All of them do, with the rookies. And they tell them, your life is about to change, and here's how it's going to change. Everybody you've ever known in your life is going to be coming after you. Everybody you've ever known is going to say, gee, my dog needs surgery, or my little kid can't go to college, or we need a new roof, or it's just the nature of the business when you have a lot of money. That's just what happens. They do it to lottery winners, right? A lot of lottery winners want to go anonymous because they know the storm is coming. And so when a kid is on a college campus and he's going to class, right? He's going to whatever class it is, right? Whatever it is, marketing, whatever. There are going to be people in that classroom that know that Johnny Football or Susie Gymnastics star or Michael Basketball player has got an NIL deal worth $500,000, $1.2 million. A collection of NIL deals that put in the neighborhood of three. Can you imagine being Brock Bowers, for example? Brock Bowers at Georgia, the tight end, has tons of NIL deals. You don't think some buddy of his who's struggling with student loans hasn't poked him up and said, hey, man, you think you can loan me $60,000? Right? These are the things that these guys have to deal with all the time, as well as studying. And yet in the NFL, they give you resources as a rookie to say, hey, this is how you kind of fight back on that. There are going to be people that are going to be after you for your money. There's going to be swindlers out there after you for your money. This is what we have people within this team that can help you with that kind of stuff. People we trust that can help you with that stuff. And now the schools are starting to do this. I don't think Eli Drinkwitz is wrong by saying, hey, we all like X, but there's nothing wrong with being concerned about why. There's nothing wrong with saying, hey, I'd like to, like, let's put some parameters on this so we can help these people, these student athletes, who are just going to get inundated with money. I've said for a while that I wonder about contracts. Is there any legal presence? Can the school, for example, provide legal advice? Right? The schools don't pay the players. This is not a check they give. For many of you know this, but it's got to be said. The schools are not the one giving these players money. They're getting it from outside agencies. Right? Now, if you've ever seen the movie, there was a movie with Jessica Lange, Everybody's All-American. You ever seen it, Ron? It's about the ghost running back. It was a book by Frank DeFord, and they made it into a movie. And I think it was Dennis Quaid that played the Grey Ghost.
Probably.
He was a
Sounds about right.
Yeah, he was a running back at LSU, really popular, right? And he was a Heisman Trophy candidate, one of the top running backs in the country. Helped lead them to a Cotton Bowl, Sugar Bowl victory, and all that. And it was, and he married the homecoming queen, and they had, you know, they had babies, and they were. And he was the NFL. He was an NFL player, and he. But when he retired, one part of the movie that's kind of sad is he gets in business with a guy that wants to utilize his name, image, and likeness for a restaurant. And he, the guy just worships the ground this guy walks on. He just, he's a jock sniffer, right? And he goes, there's a part of the movie where the ghost isn't showing up anymore. Because he's supposed to show up and tell stories to all the old fans who remember the good old days when you ran the ball for LSU. And he tells him, he's yelling at him, like, you got to be there, man. Like, the business side kicks in and the fandom goes away, right? The business guy is like, yeah, I'm a fan of yours, but you know what? We had a business agreement and you're not living up to the business agreement. Now, think about that with an 18-year-old kid. Think about a guy that's like, man, Tommy, I just love the way you throw that football for good old State U. We're so excited about a possible national championship. But Tommy doesn't show up to the grand opening. Tommy doesn't show up and sign autographs.
Yeah, he slept in.
Right? Yeah,
college
exactly.
Kids do, or he decided to go with his buddies someplace.
Tommy's late for the shoot, for the commercial shoot, and it costs the guy more money because they have to wait on him to show up. Like, there will be a moment where the guy loses that, man, Tommy, I'm just so glad you're here at State U. And it comes into, yeah, you got to talk to my lawyer because we paid you $500,000 for this. Right? Those are the kind of things that NIL bring out. They bring out the sharks. Do you think a lot of NIL people are just giving these kids money without something in return? And maybe that something in return is just play for State U, man. But they want their money. Right? They want the thing in return. They'll give you $500,000, but they're doing it for a reason. They're not doing it because they're friendly. They're not doing it because they like you. They won't like you when you transfer to USC. They won't transfer if you like if you transfer to Oklahoma. So that's what I think Eli Drinkwitz is pointing out here. It's like, wait a minute, guys, I can support NIL. I can say, hey, get your money. But the second I start saying, hey, we may be throwing a lot of money and responsibility at kids that are only 18 years old, somehow you guys are going to put it that I'm a player hater? That somehow I don't like players making money? Like, I think there needs to be a more vocal point that these coaches are saying, look, you guys think I just want the old system. You guys think that I don't want to be competing in a world of NIL and who's got the best boosters and whatnot. And I don't want to give you that perception. Well, I said this about Dabo Swinney. When Dabo first came out and said, NIL, oh, blah, blah, terrible, blah, blah, blah. I said, it's gonna hurt you, man. You've got to be supportive of this. You have got to let people know that you want your players to make money. And as you told me that story about Clemson put together a whole NIL program.
Yep.
Right? A whole NIL department. You need to do that.
A whole building now.
Right. You need to say to student athletes, come here. We'll help you enhance your NIL.
Yeah, we'll manage it for you.
Yeah. If you need the, and I hope that comes with some financial advice.
Yeah, because really all these kids, like the kid you're talking about, you know, from State U, he just wants the money.
Yeah.
But he's probably not aware of the responsibilities when he signs that contract.
Can you imagine every aunt, uncle, cousin he's had or friend in high school picking up a phone call? I mean, it's got to be enormous, enormous when they know you have got $3 million coming your way as a starting quarterback in a major Big Ten school.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Well, it is a changing landscape of college, college sports. It has been over the last. I wanted it like anything. I think you can't get it perfect right away. Right? There's going to be some people that have got. All right, we got kind of burned a little bit here. This kind of burn. It's over time you start realizing, oh, maybe we need to do this. Maybe we need to do that. I think that making it the wild, wild west of NIL is in theory, fine, because you don't want to limit student athletes' ability to make money. But I also think there's got to be a way to help them in the process. And I think schools that help their student athletes manage their money more or help them in the negotiations are going to be seen as, hey, you know what? That's a good place to go when you are a high-level, highly sought-after recruit in any sport. And you start going, you know what? That school actually has a program that's going to allow me to sort of put the money in the right places and make sure that I'm managing it well. You know, with my trusted family or whoever, I want to get with that. Because I just think that when we live in such a black and white society now where things, if you say one thing, you really, like, it's perceived that you mean this, that whether it's, you say this, and that means you're anti this. Like, there's no gray area anymore. There just isn't. There isn't on anything. You can't even raise a concern on some issues without somebody going, well, it's obvious that you hate student-athletes and you hate student-athletes making money. It's clear. Like, no, it's not clear. I just want them to manage their money better. I just want to make sure that the adults in the room are in place to make sure that these kids aren't getting exploited. No, clearly you meant that student-athletes should basically be athlete slaves to the university. No, I didn't mean that. But that's the world we live in now, right? That's the world we live in on almost everything. And so Eli Drinkwitz is like, I can't win. I can't win. The moment I say I'm concerned about the student-athlete, you know, and about NIL, that they're getting as much money as my brother-in-law, who's a pediatrician. People are thinking I'm jealous of them, or I'm devaluing their impact. No, entertainers make more money than most people who do very, very important things. Right? That's just the way it is. Right? I tell an old joke all the time to people. When I say, listen, I talk on the radio for a living. When the meteor comes, I don't get to go to the cave. I don't save lives. I'm not important. I'm not a botanist. I'm not going to be able to grow food on a rock for the next generation. I'm not an engineer. Like, when the meteor comes, I'm not getting invited. Like some of you who do very important jobs are going to be able to go to the cave and live in the next generation of life when the meteor and everything subsides and the waters receded. Like, you'll be able to survive it. I won't. But here's the thing. Most of the people that we're talking about are in the world of entertainment where their presence is valuable, right? The starting quarterback of a major university is as big in that area as quarterbacks at NFL cities, right? Be A.J. McCarron at Alabama. Like, remember him? Like, he's literally the king of the state, right? Like, some of these guys are so valuable to their area and to their audience that naturally people are going to pursue them for national endorsement deals, big local endorsement deals. So it bothers me that a guy like Eli Drinkwitz, who's smart and is just trying to put a spotlight on the, hey, not everything is positive. Sometimes there's a negative to it, and I just want to highlight the negative and maybe we can find an answer to it. He's just seen as a guy who hates players. So, one other thing that they're hashing out down there in Destin, Florida, is whether or not that conference is going to go to 9 games within the conference with Texas and Oklahoma joining it, or are they going to stay at 8? So when Texas and Oklahoma finally kick into the SEC, it's going to be a 16-team league. Good Lord. 16 teams in that conference. That is crazy. That is crazy. Like, they're going to run out of room at these events where you go, like, whenever you go to an SEC basketball game, or they put flags up of all the schools that are in it, eventually they're just going to have it outside. They're just going to, like, it's going to run through the corridor down the hallway.
It'll start looking like the draft.
Yeah, exactly. But so the schools are saying, okay, do we want to go to 9 games or do we want to go to 8? Nick Saban has always supported 9 games even before expansion. He thinks, like, all these other conferences do it. Why aren't we doing it? But there's a couple of reasons why that they're not doing it. And the one reason is, and I kind of buy that. You know how ESPN is just cutting Disney, ESPN, they're just cutting people left and right. They're just going through some budget cuts. So they don't want to give ESPN in their current SEC deal an extra SEC matchup weekend when they didn't really pay for it. And I'm like, well, that's kind of harsh, but it's basically true. Like when we renegotiate the deal, then we'll give you an extra weekend of SEC games. But until we do that, you've paid for 8 regular season games.
Yep.
You're not getting 9. So how about that?
You know what I smell?
Yeah.
Streaming.
Yeah, I know, right?
So you had that 9th game, and the SEC would be like, let's try YouTube, or let's try Amazon. Let's try one of these other forms of TV watching now and see what happens.
We should put a buzzer. We should put an electric buzzer on Greg Sankey and any SEC official. And anytime they say, well, we want to do what's best for the student athlete, we should just hit the buzzer and make it.
We mean us.
Right? Sorry. Let me just repeat that again. Why don't we have 9 games in the SEC? Well, we're thinking about the concerns of the student.
All I'm picturing is Greg Sankey is that kid in Ghostbusters.
Right, yeah.
Where, you know, the gum just falls out.
Right. It's just, could you please give us the real truth and the real answer to all of this? The student athlete. You're talking about a sport that has just went, you know, we're just coming to the conclusion that a 4-team playoff isn't quite good enough.
Right.
We're going to add some more games, if you don't mind. Oh, stop with this. Bzzz. They did this for the college football playoff forever and ever and ever. You would say in the 1970s even, you'd go, hey, how about a playoff thing? Now, with all due respect to the student athlete who we're trying to protect in this process, zap. No. What is the real reason? Okay, the bowl system is lucrative. You just hit the nail on the head. Exactly right. The bowl system is lucrative.
And listen, you know, I don't fault them at all because now they got to find a way to make the money that they're missing out on.
Right, yeah.
You know, they used to make all this money on the name, image, likeness of student athletes.
Right, yeah, right.
You know, dictating their life every which way possible. I mean, just go back 10 years. You know, I mean, it was like almost a prison system for the college athletes.
We said this for a while, that there's a generation coming going, you did what to them?
Exactly.
You mean you told them they couldn't leave? Like, yeah, we did. We were going to punish the hell out of them if they ever dreamed about going to another school.
You mean to tell me a coach couldn't give his player a sandwich?
That's right, yeah. A snowstorm and they weren't allowed to drive them home?
No. Nope.
Yep. Nope. Had to walk.
Had
to walk in the minus 10 degrees of Wisconsin.
Or, you know, sit there at the bus stop waiting for the bus to never show up.
I'm serious. This generation's coming going to think we were crazy. What the hell was that?
Because it's so cruel, so mean.
So Johnny comes in to see the coach, and he wants to go to a school closer to his parents, but they just happen to be within the division, and the coach could just say, nope. Yep, that's exactly right. Yep.
Oh, my favorite.
He was not allowed to transfer to another school. He had to get permission from his coach in order to go to that particular school.
No, my favorite will be like, so Johnny transferred, but he had to wait an entire year, but he still had to be in school?
Yeah, he had to go to class. He had to go to practice. He had to do all that, but he couldn't play.
He couldn't play in games. He was allowed to be a full member of the team. Yep. He had a uniform and everything. He just couldn't wear it at the game?
Saturdays, he could not suit up. That was the rule.
Yeah,
college football.
Had to wait one full year, but you would do it for swimming. No one cares about swimming.
No, it's swimming. You transfer early.
Smaller schools, yeah, just go ahead, or smaller sports, or whatever.
I don't think they were sweating on the golf team.
Yeah,
it's so ridiculous.
Never heard a golfer had to wait out an entire season because he transferred.
I've never seen. I like this would be a fun question on Twitter. Find me an industry more embarrassed about making money than college athletics. They never want to talk about it.
No.
And it's the main reason they do everything they do. Well, everything they do is based on money. And yet they're almost afraid to go, yeah, no, we did it because we could get more revenue. Yeah. So we find other reasons for it.
It is a taboo concept by them.
No, no doubt. It's like, hey, why do we have a first four tournament in Dayton? Well, we looked at it and we just think that for the student athlete would have a better experience if everybody could participate. Zap! Yeah. Stop saying those things. Just say it's the money. Golly, what is wrong with you? It's so crazy.
I just need, you know, but piggybacking off that, why is it always in Dayton?
I know, yeah, right.
Why?
It's probably a gold stash that they have there. Exactly. They just keep giving these guys. Good, the Bad, the Dumb next hour. Hondo Carpenter in Las Vegas on the Raiders, too. As we continue, it's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.